taste that for herself and see if it's worth eating. His companion lets out a bark of laughter. So brave when they think no one else is listening. I stop in the square, but before I let them go about their day, I open my mouth and speak. Careful. She is always watching. Both of them hear me. They freeze in their steps and whirl around, their faces taut with fear. They search for who might have said it. I stay invisible in the center of the piazza, smiling. Their fear spikes, and as it does, I inhale deeply, relishing the spark of power behind their energy. I'm tempted to reach out and seize it. Instead, I just look on as the men turn pale as ghosts. Come on, the blonde man whispers, his voice choking with terror. He has begun to tremble, although I doubt it's from the cold, and a hint of tears beads in his eyes. His face blurs in my vision, smearing like the rest of the world, and for an instant, all I can see are streaks of black where his eyes should be, a slash of pink where his mouth once was. The two hurry off through the piazza. I look around, amused by my little game. Rumors have spread throughout the city about how the white wolf haunts the air, that she can see straight into your homes and into your souls. It has left a permanent sense of disquiet in the city's energy, a constant undercurrent of fear that keeps my belly full. Good. I want the unmarked to feel this perpetual unease under my rule, to know that I'm always watching them. It will make any rebellions against me harder to organize, and it will make them understand the fear that the marked suffered for so long. Other people pass me by, unaware of my presence. Their faces look like ruined paintings. I try to push past the blurriness, but a dull headache creeps in, and suddenly, I feel exhausted. A patrol of my white-cloaked inquisitors march by, their eyes searching for unmarked people who might be breaking my new laws. Their armor looks like an undulating wave in my vision. I grimace, clutching my head, and decide to return to the palace. The rain has soaked through my own cloak, and a warm bath sounds enticing. By the time I arrive at the steps leading up to the bathhouse, the drizzle has turned into a steady rain. My bare feet create a faint slapping sound against the marble floor as I go inside. There, I finally drop my invisibility. Usually, two maidens are trailing behind me when I come here, but I just want to sink myself into warm waters and let my mind wander away. As I approach the bath hall, I hear a pair of voices drifting out from within. My steps slow for a moment. The bathhouse isn't empty as I had thought. I should have sent a servant ahead of me to clear the halls. I hesitate a moment longer, then decide to continue on. After all, I am queen. I can always order whoever they are to leave. The pool stretches out in a long rectangle from where I stand to the other side of the hall. A fog of warmth hangs in the air, and I can smell the moisture. At the other end of the pool come the voices I'd heard a moment earlier. As I slip off my damp robes and dip my toes into the warm water, I hear a low rumble of laughter that makes me pause. Suddenly, I recognize who it is. Maggiano. He did say he was going to be at the baths. He has his back turned to me, and it's difficult to see him clearly through the warm mist in the air. But it's unmistakably him. His brown back is bare and slick, his muscles gleaming, and his braids are piled high on his head in a knot. He leans casually over the edge of the pool, and standing nearby on the stones is the same maiden I'd seen with him by the palace. She is kneeling down, her hair falling over one shoulder, a shy smile on her face as she hands him a glass of spiced wine. Ah, the whispers say, stirring, and here we thought he was your plaything. Again, bitterness rises in my chest, and my illusions weave an image before me once more. The maiden, no longer dressed, bathing with Maggiano, water glistening on her skin, him reaching for her, running his hands along the outline of her body. Illusion. I close my eye, take a deep breath, and count in my head, trying to still my thoughts. It takes so much more effort than it once did. I feel a violent urge to get out of the pool, throw my clothes back on, and rush to my chambers to leave them here to whatever they want to do. But I also feel an overwhelming need to hurt the maiden. My pride pushes back. You are the Kinetrin Queen. No one should force you to leave. So instead, I lift my chin and wade into the water, letting the warmth envelop my body. At the sound of my approach, the maiden glances in my direction. Then she freezes as she recognizes me. I can tell that her gaze goes immediately to the scarred side of my face. A surge of fear comes from her, and I have to push down my desire to frighten her even more, to taunt her with my power. Instead, I just smile. She jumps to her feet and drops into a bow. "Your Majesty!" she calls out. At that, Maggiano shifts slightly in my direction. He must have sensed my energy the instant I entered the hall, I realize. He must have known I was here, but he pretends to be surprised. "Your Majesty," he says, echoing the maiden. "I'm sorry I didn't hear you enter." I flick one hand at the maiden. She needs no second urging. She scurries off toward the closest door, not daring to bid Maggiano farewell. Maggiano watches her go, then turns to me. His gaze goes from my face to the water lapping around my bare shoulders. "Do you wish to bathe alone, Your Majesty?" he asks. He makes a move to get out, and as he does, he rises halfway out of the pool. Water runs down his taut stomach. I have never seen Maggiano undressed before. My cheeks warm. I also notice, for the first time, his marking fully exposed. It's a dark red patch that runs along the length of his side, where Sunland priests had so long ago tried to cut off his marking in an attempt to fix him. The first time I saw a glimpse of that old scar, it was the night we sat together by the campfire, when Violetta was still with me. I remember Maggiano's lips on mine, the silence surrounding the crackle of the fire. "Stay," I reply. "I could use some company." Maggiano smiles, but there is a certain wariness in his eyes. "Just some company," he teases, "or mine." I shake my head once, trying to keep the smile off my own face as we both move to the edge of the pool. "Well," I say, "you're certainly better company than Taryn." "And how is our favorite madman doing?" "He's not healing like he used to. There are chafes on his wrists that are constantly bleeding." At that, Maggiano's carefree attitude shifts. "Are you sure?" I saw it myself. Maggiano is silent. Even though I know he's thinking the same thing I am, Raffaele's prediction for us all. "And how have you felt lately?" Maggiano asks me quietly. "Your illusions." The whispers in my head murmur amongst themselves. "We aren't a weakness, Adelina. We are your strength. You shouldn't resist us so much." I look away and concentrate on the water lapping around us. "I'm fine," I reply. "We will sail for Tamora in a few weeks' time, and as always, I want you at my side." "Invading the great empire of Tamora already," Maggiano replies. "Restless so soon? I've barely had the chance to unpack all of my possessions." I can tell immediately that the lightness in his voice is not real. "You're not excited. I thought the great Maggiano would be intrigued by all the gold that the Sunlands hold."
"I am intrigued by it," he says, "and apparently so are you. I only hesitate, my love, because of how soon it has been since we were in Dumor. Tamora is not a weak nation, even after losing their northern territory to you. They are an empire with three kings and a strong navy. Are your men rested enough for another invasion?"
"Tamora will be my crown jewel," I reply. Then I frown at him. "You still pity Dumor for what I did to them." Maggiano's smile finally drops away and he gives me a serious look. "I pitied them for losing their country, but I do not pity them for looking down on the marked. The fire in you burns as fiercely as it did when I first met you. You'll make Dumor a better place."
When did your heart turn so soft? I ask him as I skim the surface of the water with my fingers, creating tiny ripples. When I first met you, you were a hardened thief who delighted in taking others' belongings. I stole from vain noblemen and arrogant queens, drunkards and fools. And do you miss that life? Maggiano is silent. I can feel his nearness, the warmth of his skin barely brushing against mine. I have everything I could ever want here, Adelina, he finally says. You've handed me what feels like the world's riches. A palace, a life of luxury. He draws closer. I get to be at your side. What more do I need? But I have taken something away from him. It is on the tip of his tongue, and I can hear it as surely as if he'd said it aloud. Everyone needs a purpose, and I have taken away his. What can he do now that he has been given everything? There is no more thrill of the hunt, the excitement of the chase. Maggiano lifts one hand out of the water and touches my chin for a moment, tilting it up, leaving a droplet of water to run along my skin. I'm looking forward to seeing you become Queen of the Sunlands, he says, his gaze wandering across my face. What do you see now, Maggiano? I wonder. When he first met me, I was a girl cast out by her friends, allied with her sister, intent on getting revenge on the Inquisition Axis. Now I rule the Inquisition. What do you see when you stare at me? Is it the same girl you once kissed by a crackling fire? Gradually, an old mischievous light appears in his eyes. I tremble as his lips brush against my ear, and I can't help but think about the submerged half of him, flushing at the knowledge that I, too, am naked below my shoulders. I've found a secret place, he whispers. His hands find mine under the water, tugging on my wrist. Come with me. I'm unable to suppress a laugh. Where are you taking me? I say in a mock scolding voice. I'll beg your forgiveness later, Your Majesty. He teases back, flashing me a grin as he pulls us toward the far end of the pool. Here, the water branches into two narrower segments, each leading into a more private chamber. One of the private chambers has been sealed off for the past few months, though, as part of the archway had collapsed into the water and left it impassable. As we near the bend, I think Maggiano is going to lead us into the still-open private chamber on the right. But he doesn't. Instead, he guides us to the left, toward the collapsed arch. We pause in front of it, a trail of water disturbed in our wake. Behold! Maggiano spreads his arms in a gesture of pretend triumph. Revel in its majesty. I wrinkle my nose. Are you trying to impress me with a collapsed archway? No faith. No faith at all. He is back to his old self, and it sends a rare thread of joy through my heart. Follow me, he murmurs. Then he takes a deep breath and dives down, grabbing my hand as he descends. At first, I hesitate. There are still a few things I fear in life. Fire, death, and the last time I was submerged in water in a canal in Meritas when my illusions first betrayed me, I did not fare well. When I resist, Maggiano resurfaces. Don't be afraid, he says with a half smile. You're with me. His hand tightens around my wrist, tugging me down again playfully, and this time I feel safe enough to take a deep breath of my own and do as he says. The water is warm, caressing my face, and as I go deeper, the world disappears into shades of light and muffled sound. Through the water, I catch a glimpse of Maggiano's bare body, gliding like a balera down toward the broken archway. Then I catch sight of what he wants me to see. At the very bottom, the archway hasn't completely blocked off the private chamber behind it. There is still a narrow entrance under the water, one that looks just wide enough for a person to swim through. Maggiano goes first. His movements send up a cloud of bubbles. I follow in his wake. The light in the water darkens, turning black, and for a moment, I feel a suffocating sense of fear. What if I have entered the underworld? What if I will never surface again? The whispers in my head stir, chittering. What if he is leading you in here so he can drown you? Then I feel Maggiano's familiar hand close on my wrist again, pulling me up. I surface with a gasp. As I brush wet hair and water from my face, I look up to see a chamber lit only by the faint blue glow of moss on the walls. Maggiano watches me as I take in the sight. He turns in the small secret chamber, gesturing along the walls to where the plants have started to grow. Amazing, isn't it? He says, how quickly life finds a place for itself when no one is around to keep it out. I stare in wonder at the moss's faint glow. What is this? I ask, reaching a hand out to the blue-green vegetation. It feels as velvet as the finest fur. Fairy moss, Maggiano replies, admiring the view along with me. It thrives in damp caves in Meritas, too. Once it finds a good slit on the wall where it can seed, it spreads everywhere. They'll have their work cut out for them once they fix the archway and reopen this chamber. He grins. Let's hope it takes them a long time. I smile. The glow adds a hue of blue to the edge of Maggiano's skin, softening his features. He drips water. I draw closer to him, suddenly bolder. I suppose you come in here often then, I say, half teasing, bringing your maids and admirers. Maggiano frowns at that. He shakes his head. You think I'm betting every maid I speak to, he says and shrugs. Flattered, Your Majesty, but you are very wrong. So what you're telling me is that you come to this secret space alone? He tilts his head in a flirtatious way. What's wrong with a thief wanting a little private time now and then? He comes closer. His breath warms my skin like the fog that hovers over the water. Of course, here you are. I suppose I'm not alone after all. A blush rises on my cheeks as I become very aware of my bare skin, both above and below the water. My energy stills, as it tends to around him, and I find myself aching for his touch. He leans down so that his lips are just a breath away from my own, and there we hover, suspended in time. Do you still remember the fire? Under the stars? He asks, suddenly shy, and I feel innocent for the first time in a long while. I remember what we were doing, I reply with a small smile. A laugh escapes his lips, then his expression turns serious. You asked me whether or not I miss my old life, he whispers, his voice now hoarse. Do you know what I miss the most? That night. My heart skips a beat, aching in sudden sadness. And what about the girl you once sat beside on that night? Do you miss her too? She is still here, he answers. That is why I stay. Then he closes the distance between us, and his lips touch mine. Around us is nothing but the sound of water lapping gently against overgrown stone and the faint glow from the moss. His hand trails along my bare back, tracing the curve of my spine. He pulls me close so that our chests are pressed together. His kiss goes from my lips to my chin, and there he plants them lower and lower, creating a gentle path along my neck. I sigh, wanting nothing more in this moment than us, content with staying here forever. The tether tying me to Enzo fades in my mind, and for an instant I can forget that we are linked at all. Maggiano's hands run down my back, unwilling to let go. My breaths come in ragged gasps. Gradually, I notice that we have made our way to the edge of the pool, where he presses me tightly against the stone. One of his hands tangles in my hair, drawing me forward to him. His kisses return to my lips, more urgent now, and I fall into them eagerly. A low groan rumbles in his throat. I wonder for a wild second if he will take us further, and my heart pounds in my chest. Your Majesty, he whispers, breathless. A note of amusement creeps into his voice. You'll ruin me. Then he pulls me to him so that every inch of our bodies is pressed together. I lean against him, soaking in the luxury of the warm water. I don't want to ask him what he's thinking. A faint voice rings out, muffled from the other side of our hidden space. I ignore it as Maggiano drowns me in another kiss. Through the haze of my thoughts, the voice comes floating over again. Your Majesty! Your Majesty! Water ripples against our bodies. Your Majesty! The voice continues drawing nearer. Now I recognize it as one of the stewards who deliver my messages. There is an urgent letter for you. She's not here, another voice complains. The bathhouse is empty. The voice sighs. She's probably off slitting some poor fool's throat. The words break me out of my haze. I push away from Maggiano right as his eyes open again. He glances toward the collapsed entrance too, then shoots me a questioning glance. I straighten and give him a smile, unwilling to show him that the servant's remark has bothered me. Instead, I exhale and try to bring down the flush in my cheeks. You'd better go, Maggiano whispers, his words echoing in the space. He nods toward the collapsed archway. Far be it from me to interrupt something urgent. Maggiano, I start to say. But the rest of the words don't want to come out, and I stop trying to force them. I take a deep breath before ducking under the warm water and swimming through the space that leads back out into the main bath hall. I break through the surface with a loud splash. A yelp of surprise comes from somewhere in the chamber. As I wipe water away from my face, I see two messengers standing at the edge of the bath, their eyes wide, their fear hovering over them. Yes, I say coolly, raising my brow at them. This snaps the men out of their terrified stupor. They jump backward in unison and bend down in low bows. Your Majesty, one of them says, voice trembling. This is the one who had spoken about me with sarcastic disgust. I hope you had a lovely bath. His words fade into an incoherent jumble as Maggiano comes up behind me, shaking water from his hair. If he weren't here, I might indulge myself in punishing this messenger for speaking about me so carelessly. The whispers stir, delighted at the fear emanating from the man, but I shake them off. He's lucky this time. You mentioned an urgent letter, I finally say, interrupting the messenger's distracted train of thought. What is it? The second man, smaller and slighter, approaches the water. He presents a rolled parchment to me. I wade toward him and lift one hand out of the water to take it. The letter's crimson wax seal bears the royal crest of Tamora. I crack it open, unfurl the parchment, and freeze. I know this handwriting. No one else can write in such an elegant script with such careful flourish. Behind me, Maggiano approaches and looks over my shoulder at the message. He whispers the first thought on my mind. It's a trap, he says. But I cannot speak. I only read the message again and again, wondering what it really means. To Her Majesty of Kenetra, your sister is dying. You must come to Tamora at once. Raffaele Laurent Bassette. Where will you go when the clock strikes 12? What will you do when you face yourself? How will you live knowing what you've done? How will you die if your soul's already gone? Excerpt of monologue from Campasia and Eratosthenes, as performed by Willem Denbury. Adelina Amuteru. Tomorrow, we set sail for the shores of Tamora. So tonight, the entire palace is alight with festivities and celebration of our upcoming invasion. Long tables piled high with food sit in every hall of the palace, while the courtyards are bright with lanterns and dancing. I sit with Sergio in one of the gardens. In my hands is the strip of parchment from Raffaele, which I've played with so much now, I can hardly read the letters anymore. My stomach feels hollow and sick. I couldn't even finish my herbal drink, and now, with nothing to keep them at bay, The whispers have started murmuring incessantly in the back of my mind again. Violetta is with the daggers after all. Your enemies. What a traitor. Why do you still care for her? Have you forgotten how she abandoned you? Yes, she tried to wrench us away from you. She's better off dead. Beside me, Maggiano's chair is empty. He has taken up his lute and is now sitting in the arched entranceway to the garden, playing a song he's composed just today. Below him, a crowd has gathered. Everyone is already drunk. They sway in their dances, stumbling all over, laughing uproariously. At the edges of my vision, an illusion of Violetta unfurls. I see her dying on the floor, blood spilling in a pool all around, while the other partygoers step over her body. I force my attention back to Maggiano, hoping he can distract me. Maggiano is a sight to behold tonight. His silks are gold and white, and trinkets glimmer amongst his long braids, all of them pulled over one shoulder. He leans forward and flashes a brilliant smile down at the cheering people listening to his music. Every now and then, he pauses in his playing to call for challenges. People shout the names of old folk songs at him, then cheer and clap when he takes them on. I blush as I remember the bathwater beating on his braids, his bare skin against mine in our secret pool, illuminated by the dim blue glow of fairy moss. Perhaps he's thinking about it too. Ignoring us won't change anything, Adelina. Your sister will still die, and you'll be happy about it, won't you? The whispers push at my mind until I grimace, clutching my head. Your Majesty! Sergio's voice beside me sends the voices skittering to the recesses of my mind again. I relax a little in my seat and look over at him. He returns my look with obvious concern. It's nothing, I say. I'm thinking of Raffaele's letter. I hold it up to show Sergio. He lets out a grunt of approval as he tears into a leg of roast hare. Perhaps he's heard rumors of your split from her and wants to use it against you. Violetta might not even be with him. A part of me still stirs at the thought of Raffaele, and instantly I imagine him on the deck of Queen Maeve's ship, surrounded by flames, his forehead pressed against Enzo's, calming the prince, looking back at me with tragic, tear-filled eyes, shaking his head in despair. If justice is what you seek, Adelina, you will not find it like this. They are in Tamora, I say a little too loudly, in an attempt to drown out the whispers. No doubt working with the Golden Triad there. The rulers must think using my sister against me will make me act carelessly. They're trying to trick you into a meeting, Sergio replies, although he casts me a careful glance that doesn't match his bold words. To get you alone in a room, but what they'll get instead is an army. He throws back the rest of his drink in his cup, visibly reacting to how strong it is, and then clears some space on the table before us. He pulls out a wrinkled parchment and spreads it out. He has been carrying this with him everywhere lately, so I'm already familiar with it. It is his battle plan for Tamora. I've been digging up all the maps I can find of the landscape around Alamor. Look, the city itself is surrounded by high walls, but if we can get up here... He points to a strange outcropping of cliffs that meander along the eastern side of the city. We can find a way to get over the walls. And how do we do that? I ask, folding my arms. Balearas can't fly that far inland. Not in a sunland desert. They'll suffocate in the dry air. The instant I say it, I know the answer. I glance at Sergio, who gives me a sly smile as he pours himself a cup of water instead of wine. I think I know someone who can bring us a good storm, he replies. I give him a smile back. It should work, I say, leaning forward in my seat to peer more closely at Sergio's calculations. I'm impressed with the way he has split up the rest of our men. We'll surprise the Tamorans in their own home. Sergio's eyes sweep once over the festivities, out of habit. I follow his gaze. Off in the corner, A path is being cut through the crowd, causing cheers and taunts to go up. The entertainment has arrived. We'll do more than surprise them, Sergio replies. We'll defeat them so soundly that their golden triad will soon be mopping your marble floors. Our conversation pauses as the procession makes its way to the main clearing. It's led by two young inquisitors who now gleefully shove forward several people with bound arms. They stumble and fall, then crouch into some resemblance of a bow in my direction. All around them, the crowd cheers. Wine spills out of goblets. Your Majesty, one of the inquisitors calls up to me. His hair shines in the light, revealing a glimmer of scarlet red against the black. Found these four in the streets and brought them in for you. I overheard one using the word malfetto. Another was trying to pass as one of us with false markings. At that, the crowd, all of whom are marked, starts to shout curses at the people tied up on the ground. I peer at them to get a closer look. One is an old man, while another is an aging woman. The third is a boy barely out of childhood, while the fourth is a girl newly wedded, still wearing double bands around one of her fingers. I can tell the girl is the one who is trying to wear false markings. The color in her hair and against her skin looks disturbed, where an inquisitor must have smeared his hand across it. Burn them all! Someone yells, and this is met with a thunderous cheer. Let's have some fun! Another shouts. Over by the archway, Maggiano's eyes meet my own. He isn't smiling anymore. Their fear and hatred fill this place. The whispers chitter again, fully awake now, and the terror wafting off the four prisoners fills my senses, feeding me. I take them in and feel little pity. After all, not much time has passed since they once stood by and watched as the marked were dragged through the streets and set ablaze, saw our families stoned to death by crowds of enthusiastic onlookers. We used to be the ones to sneak powders and potions from apothecaries desperate to hide our markings. How quickly our former enemies have tried to adopt our appearance, how eagerly they smear colors on themselves in an attempt to be more like us. Why shouldn't we cheer their punishment now? Beside me, Sergio has gone silent too. I look on as an inquisitor lights a torch from one of the lanterns, then glances expectantly at me. So does everyone else. The noise fades as they wait for my command. I am their queen. The malfettos, the malformed, the marked. I give them what they want, and they give me their loyalty. It is what I want, too. My gaze turns to the trembling prisoners on the ground. I stop on the youngest, the boy. He stares back at me with vacant eyes. Beside him, the old man lifts his tear-stained face long enough for me to see the blinding hatred in them. Demon queen, I know he's thinking. The whispers in my head build to a dull rumble. I bow my head and close my eye, trying in vain to shut them out. On another night, I would be more ruthless. In the past year, I've ordered prisoners executed before me, so this would be nothing new. But tonight, my heart feels heavy with the weight of Raffaele's message. Visions of Violetta continue to crowd my thoughts. One glance in Maggiano's direction is enough. He gives me the subtlest shake of his head, and his words return to my mind as if whispered in my ear. Perhaps he is drawing on my power. Let the people love you a little, mi Adelinetta. Release them! I hear myself saying as I rub my temples. And get on with the celebrations. The crowd's raucous cheers fade away as they gradually understand what I've said. The prisoners stare at me in stunned silence, as do my inquisitors. Was I not clear? I call out, my voice ringing in the chamber. The corners of the space turn dark and a haunting wail whips through the air. The crowd lets loose a round of frightened gasps as they edge away from the encroaching blackness. My soldiers jump to action now, untying the ropes that bind the prisoners' arms and forcing them to their knees so that they can thank me. They sway, blinking away confusion, and I look on, wondering how my sister has the power to influence my decisions even when she's not here. Get out of my sight, I snap to the kneeling prisoners, before I change my mind. They need no second bidding. The girl scrambles to her feet first, then rushes over to the old man and pulls him to his feet. The old woman follows. The boy lingers the longest, puzzling over my expression before he, too, hurries after the others. The crowd's eyes turn from me to them, and as the musicians try to strike up the songs again, scattered singing begins to puncture the awkward silence. My focus shifts back up to the archway, but Maggiano is no longer there. His absence cuts through the rising tide of darkness in my chest, leaving me exhausted. In this moment, all I want is to get away from here and find him. I weave an illusion of invisibility around myself while the crowd tries to resume celebrating. Only Sergio realizes that I've gone, although he doesn't call out to stop me. I shake my head in disgust as I walk. All this dwelling on Violetta has turned me soft tonight. I make my way out of the gardens and into a dark hall. There are crowds of new nobility here too, marked people to whom I'd handed aristocratic titles after stripping them from their unmarked masters. I push through them. One of the nobles spills her wine as I shove by. I rush down the hall until I come to a winding staircase guarded by inquisitors, and then I head up to an empty floor. Finally, peace. I stop and lean my head against the wall. The whispers whirl in a cloud around me, and their fury adds to the dizziness in my head. I try to steady myself. Maggiano, I call out, wondering if he might be nearby. But my voice just echoes down the hall. You shouldn't have let them go, the whispers say. They always respond when no one else does. Why not? I retort through gritted teeth. The harmless grow up to become the bringers of wrath. You know this better than anyone, you fool. An old couple and a pair of children, I murmur with a sneer. They can't hurt me. I close my eye, and in the darkness, the whispers lurch forward, flashing their naked grins at me. Oh, how arrogant you've grown, little wolf. My anger flares at their use of my old nickname, and in response, the whispers clap in delight. Yes, that makes you furious, doesn't it? You are arrogant, my queen. Why, look, the boy has already come back for you. I open my eye again and glance around. There, standing in the hall right before me, is the boy with his grave eyes. He looks at me without a word. My anger ignites again, and the ghosts of illusions flicker in the corner of my consciousness. I thought I told you to get out. The boy doesn't answer. Instead, he takes a step closer. Are those tears of blood coming from his eyes? The blood fever. My anger shifts to uncertainty. Then the boy emits a shriek and lunges at me with a knife. I scream, stumble backward, and throw my arms instinctively across my face. Through my haze of thoughts, I see the boy vanish. He is replaced by a hulking beast. Black boils cover his hunched back, and his long claws click against the floor. He jerks toward me, his fangs stretching all the way around his head. The incarnation of my whispers. What's the matter, Your Majesty? Afraid of your own halls? He charges at me with arms outstretched, mouth extended. He is an illusion, just an illusion. He's not really there. Raffaele's note has distracted me, disturbing my energy, so I've lost control again. That's all this is. If only I stand still, he will disappear in a cloud of dust when he reaches me. He cannot hurt me. But I can't make myself stop. I am in danger. I need to run. So I do. I run as the monster pursues me, his claws tearing up the floor's stone. I can feel his hot breath on my back. The hall stretches endlessly before me like a gaping mouth, and when I blink, Arms tear out from each of the corridor's walls, reaching for me. Wake up! I scream at myself as I run. Wake up! Wake up! I stumble. I try to catch myself, but instead I fall to my hands and knees. The monster reaches me and I look up at him in horror. But he is no longer a beast. I see my father's face, contorted into a picture of rage. He seizes my wrist and yanks me forward, dragging me along the floor.
Where have you put your sister, mi Adelineta?
He asks in his eerie, quiet voice, even as I try to pull free.
What have you done with her? She left me. It wasn't my fault. She left me behind of her own free will.
What did I do to end up with a daughter like you? My father shakes his head. We round the corner and enter the cavernous space of our old family home's kitchen. Here my father seizes a butcher knife from the counter.
No, don't, please.
You open your mouth and outspill lies. Who did you learn that from,
Adelina?
Was it from one of our stable boys, or were you born this way?
I'm sorry. Tears spill down my cheek. I'm so sorry. I'm not lying. I don't know where Violeta is.
I know I am not a child trapped in my old home. I am in the Estensian Palace, and I am the queen. I want to return to the festivities. Why can't I wake up? My father glances down at me. He yanks my arm straight and slams my hand down on the floor. I'm crying so hard that I nearly choke. He positions the butcher knife over my wrist, then brings it back high over his head. I squeeze my eyes shut and wait for the blow.
Please let me wake up now, I beg.
The whispers chuckle at my plea.
As you wish, Your Majesty. Your Majesty, Adelina.
The hand clutching my arm suddenly loosens its grip. I look up to see that it belongs to Maggiano. The kitchen is gone, and I'm lying on the floor of the palace's hall again. Maggiano pulls me to him as I continue to sob. Even though his expression is concerned, he seems relieved to finally make eye contact with me. I hug him close and cling tightly. My body trembles against him.
How do you always manage to find the worst hallway to lie down in?
Maggiano says, his teasing only half-hearted. He brings his face down to my ear and murmurs something I can barely understand over and over until the whispers in my head fade into the shadows. I'm fine, I finally say, nodding against his shoulder. He pulls away far enough to give me a skeptical look.
You weren't fine just a few moments ago.
I take a shuddering breath and wipe my hand across my face. Why did you come up here anyway? Did you hear me calling for you? Was it because of what happened outside? Maggiano blinks.
You were calling for me?
He says, and then shakes his head. His mouth tightens into a thin line.
I'd hoped you would come looking for me.
I search his face, wondering if he is still mocking me, but he seems serious now. For the first time, I realize that there are inquisitors behind him. There is an entire patrol with him looking for me. All of a sudden, I feel tired to my bones. Maggiano sees me sag, and he ropes an arm behind me as I do, lifting me effortlessly. I let him. He mutters something to the inquisitors, and they start to file out. I close my eye after that, content to let Maggiano carry me back to my chambers.
Stock. 2 days' worth black bread. 2 days' worth dried meat. 6 days' worth water. Waste. 12 days' worth bread, infested. 12 days' worth water, unfit to drink. From the Journal of an Unknown Soldier during the Battle for Cordona Isle. Adelina Amuteru. It is for the best that we set sail for Tamora the next day, under a brilliant blue sky. The weeks at sea will force me to concentrate on our new mission,
to forget about my loss of control over my illusions in the hallway last night. Maggiano doesn't mention it again, either. We go about our business on the ship acting like all is fine. We have strategy meetings with Sergio as if no one remembers my incident. But I know that word of it has spread among my inquisitors. Now and then, I see them murmuring in the shadows, eyeing me with wariness. Our queen is going mad, they must be saying. Sometimes I can't tell if my madness is what's conjuring these images, twisting my confidence, so I try to ignore them as always. What does it matter if I'm mad? I have 100 ships, 20,000 soldiers, my roses at my side. I am queen. My new flag is silver and white, of course. In its center is a black, stylized symbol of a wolf surrounded by flames. I am a creature who was meant to die in fire, but I didn't, and I want to be reminded of that every time I look at this image. With each passing day at sea, the silver-white flags seem to stand out more and more against the deep, strange gray of the ocean, like a flock of birds heading toward new nesting grounds. 1 week blends into the next, and then into a third, with stale winds slowing us down and the falls of Laertes to maneuver around. At the end of the 3rd week, I stand on the deck of my ship and look back at the sea of ships behind us. Every single one of them flies my pennants. I smile at the sight. The nightmare within nightmares had visited me again last night, this time shifting so that I would wake over and over in my bed on board my ship. It is a relief that my army distracts me from the memory. We are nearing Tamoran shores, Sergio says as he comes to stand beside me. He is dressed in full armor this morning, with knives strapped to his chest and daggers crossed on his back, hilts poking out from the tops of both his boots. His hair is slicked back out of the way, and he looks restless, eager for action. Do you want me to give the order to change pennants? I nod. Do it. I, too, am dressed for war. My robes have been replaced with armor, and my hair is tied back in a tight series of braids, a Kinetran hairstyle. I've left my Tamoran head wraps behind. It was a tempting thought flying over Alamor looking like a Tamoran girl, but I want them to know what nation is coming for them. As you say, Your Majesty, Sergio replies. I glance at him. A deep crease has formed between his brows. Is he thinking about Violetta, too? This time we will succeed, I say, at conquering Tamora, at finding my sister. We will, he echoes. He offers me a terse nod, his face expressionless. The sky above us, startlingly blue when we first left Kinetra, is now threatening gray. Black clouds streak the horizon in front of us. Sergio gathers his cloak more tightly about him, his eyes trained in concentration on the approaching storm. He has been working on this tempest ever since we set sail, and now it is strong enough that I can sense the sparks in the air, the prickle along my arms. Black seas, Sergio mutters, gesturing down at the dark waters. A bad omen. Your Majesty, Maggiano's voice shouts at us from the crow's nest. We both look skyward. We've sighted land. His arm emerges from the side of the nest to point toward the horizon, and when I follow it, I see a sliver of gray land emerging underneath a dark sky. Even from this distance, the vague silhouette of a high wall can be seen, fortified by one side that is nothing more than a steep cliff. An instant later, Maggiano drops down next to us. I didn't even notice him making his way down the main masthead. That is Alamor, my love, he says, gesturing toward the cliff and wall. The last time my forces set our sights on Tamora, it was to conquer their northwestern territories. Now I am going to set foot in their capital. Thunder rolls across the ocean, and flashes of lightning make the clouds glow. I wrap my arms around myself and shudder. My mother told me stories of this place, from where my ancestors came, and how many times armies had failed to penetrate its walls. But I will be different. If Violetta were here, she would be trembling at the thunder. Is she doing so right now? Somewhere in Tamora? Sergio rests his hand on the hilt of his sword.
I haven't heard their bugles sound, but if they haven't seen us yet, they will soon. Half our fleet is going to sail into their western bay.
He draws an invisible image in the air, gesturing at the city's two bays and the cliffs running along its northern border.
The west is their main harbor, difficult to enter because of the narrow passage in. The east is an easier bay to access, but full of sharp rocks. This is where the other half of our fleet, where we, ourselves, will enter. We can sail in, but we can't dock, so we'll call our Baleeras instead.
Sergio pauses to look at me.
I hope you feel rested, because we're going to need you to conjure one vast illusion of invisibility for us.
I nod. Even if the Tamorans can see a glimpse of our ships right now, they will not be expecting them to all vanish into thin air. Invisibility, despite all my mastery, is still the most difficult of my illusions. Making myself invisible in a city usually requires a great deal of concentration, painting over my appearance with whatever is around me constantly as I move. But out here in the open ocean, all I need to do is weave an illusion of repeating waves and sky over our ships. Even if I make a few mistakes, the Tamorans will be watching from far away. It should be easy to fool them. If I can weave invisibility across the entire fleet, they won't know where we are until we are upon them.
And are the Baleeras ready?
I ask, stepping closer to the railing to look down at the ocean.
Sergio nods. They are ready.
But I sense an immediate unease in him and look up. When he sees my expression, he sighs and shakes his head.
The Baleeras have been restless all night. I'm not an expert in their behavior, but some of the other crew members tell me that they seem like they're ill. Something in the water, perhaps.
Always knew the fish from the strait tasted funny. Maggiano quips, but he barely says it like a joke. I study the Baleeras that skim the surface of the water as they swim. I can't tell how healthy they are, but Sergio's words frighten me.
Will they be strong enough to carry us across the eastern bay? I ask as one of them bursts through the waves with a haunting call.
Sergio crosses his arms.
They say the Baleeras will fly long enough to get us over the wall. I don't know if they'll survive a long battle, though.
So we need to make it quick and clean, Maggiano says.
Essentially, yes.
Maggiano raises an eyebrow at me. He doesn't say it, but I know he's wishing that we had someone like Gemma with us. Maybe we would have. Once upon a time. But Gemma is dead. She hated you anyway, add the whispers, and I harden my heart before I let myself think about her for much longer. The daggers will be waiting for us, along with the Tamoran army. The thought of forcing them to their knees gives me some sense of satisfaction.
Finally,
the whispers sigh.
In unison, our silver-white pennants turn into black ones that blend with the darkening sky. Our war drums echo deep and rhythmic across the sea.
The shores of Tamora are growing closer, and I can see the towers of the capital.
Ships have gathered in the harbor, some clustered at the narrow entrance, ready to stop us. But Sergio's storm is already doing its work.
The ocean crashes hard against the harbor's rocks, sending white spray high in the air and rocking the Tamoran fleet. The waves hit our own ships hard, too, and as one smashes into our side, I careen toward the railing. My hands find it and latch on for safety. Behind me, Maggiano makes a flying leap at the edge of the sail and lifts himself onto it in the blink of an eye. He pirouettes to the ladder steps, which lead up along the mainmast.
You're going to need a better view, he shouts. Care to join me?
He's right. I take his hand and he pulls me to the first step. Slowly, I make my way up as the ship tosses.
Blackness has nearly covered the entire sky, leaving only a sliver of blue over the capital, surrounded by churning storm clouds. Fat drops of rain have started to pelt down on us. A roll of thunder shakes us. From here, I can see the entire expanse of the Tamoran coastline, the smaller bay off to one side of the city, and the wider bay that we are now sailing dangerously close to. The bay's mouth gapes before us, and the rocks lining it are sharp and jagged, like the jaws of a monster rising out of the ocean. Directly beyond it is a line of Tamoran warships, all facing our fleet and ready for battle. As we look on, a burst of cannon fire sparks from one of the ships. A warning shot. I take in the ocean behind us. My Kenetran warships wait for our command. Maggiano gives me his perfect sidelong smile. Shall we, White Wolf? I turn back to the vast bay and the Tamoran ships, raise my hands and draw on my energy. The whispers in my head awaken, thrilled with their freedom, and the energy all around me shimmers in a web of threads. I am darkness within, and my darkness reaches out, seeking the fear in the hearts of our enemy soldiers, the anxiety in the hearts of those in my own fleet. It grows in my chest until I can't hold it in anymore. So I let it out and weave. The clouds over our fleet glow a faint blue. Then a phantom creature bursts from the water, a figure of black smoke that morphs into the ghost of a white wolf. Each of its fangs as large as one of our ships, its eyes glowing red against the storm. It hovers over our fleet with its glare trained on the Tamoran ships. It lets out a roar right as another clap of thunder shatters the sky. The Tamoran fleet fires a full volley of cannons at us, but I grin because I can feel the sudden spike of terror in the hearts of their soldiers. To them, they are staring into the face of a demon. I glance at Maggiano. Ready? I ask. He winks. Rain soaks us both now, coming down in sheets, and water drips from his high knot of braids. Always ready for you, my love. I blush a little in spite of myself and turn quickly away before he can see it. Then I shift my concentration away from my illusion. Maggiano reaches out with his energy this time. He takes over the illusion of the white wolf, and as he holds it in place, I weave an enormous blanket of invisibility over all of our ships, morphing them into the image of black ocean and stormy skies. We vanish from sight in the churning waves. The Tamoran ships continue firing, but now I can tell that they are aiming blindly, trained only in the direction of their last attack. We are close enough now to the bay's entrance that I can see the Tamoran soldiers running back and forth on the decks of the ships, their head wraps soaked in the rain. My heartbeat quickens in excitement at the sight of them. I am coming for you all. I am coming for my sister. Down below, Sergio's voice rings out. Fire! Our cannons erupt in unison. They rip into the sides of the Tamoran ships, and distant smoke and screams fill the air. They fire back, but they still cannot see us. Our ship reaches the bay's mouth, still shielded behind invisibility, and Sergio guides us in, narrowly avoiding the jagged rocks on either side. Maggiano suddenly seizes my wrist and yanks me down lower in the crow's nest. I duck instinctively with him. An instant later, I see what has caught his attention. Baleeras, dressed in silver armor, flying in our direction. It takes me a moment to recognize one of their riders, and the recognition only comes because of the flames that shoot out toward us. Enzo, the daggers are here. Our pennant catches fire for an instant before the huge spray of waves crashes over us and puts it out. But the glimpse of flames temporarily exposed where our ship is and the Tamoran's cannons point in our direction. They explode, hurling cannonballs toward us. I'm thrown against Maggiano as one of their cannons rips into the side of our vessel. My concentration flickers, and my illusion wavers long enough to reveal our ships again, ghosts moving against the storm before I quickly cover them up. Overhead, Enzo rains down another burst of fire. This time, it hits one of the ships behind us, and its forward sails erupt in flames. Other enemy Baleeras start firing arrows at us. I grit my teeth and huddle against Maggiano for warmth in the crow's nest, listening to the sound as they slice through the air. Our ship, as well as two others, has managed to make it inside the bay, but we are not moving fast enough to repel the Temuran fleet waiting for us. Enzo's bond tugs hard at my heart, and I can feel him reaching out for me as I call to him instinctively. He knows exactly where I am. Even now, I can see him circling back around, a rider separated from the others hunting me down. Bastard prince. I need to fly, I mutter to Maggiano as I stagger to my feet. We need to be airborne. As soon as the words leave my mouth, a blast of wind hits us. His answer is lost as he grabs my waist and presses us both against the crow's nest,